CheersCast is part of the Fire and Water Network.
I actually liked having my appendix out. My parents told me I could have all the ice cream I wanted.
Oh, Woody, I think you're talking about tonsils.
Well, it was a long time ago, Sam, but I'm pretty sure it was ice cream. You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to CheersCast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and helping me cover another funny episode of Cheers is returning guest, host of many shows on the Two True Freaks Network. Please welcome back Mr. Paul Spataro. What's up, Paul?
Not too much. Just thanks for having me on again. And as we were just saying, this is one of my favorite episodes. So I had specifically requested this one, and I appreciate you making the room for me. I don't know if you had to fight anybody else off for it, but
I had to shock other people to keep them away. I had to electrocute people to keep them away from this one.
You know, I was starting to just tell you before we went on that this is definitely one of my favorites, and I was curious, you know, how it's viewed in general, because it's one of my favorites, A Vacuum. I never really talked about it with anybody. So I went on before we started recording. I put in your Cheers Best Episodes, and I found, you know, I mean, obviously that's very subjective, but I found a list of the top 15 episodes, and this was not among it. So I guess I may be more unique than I thought on this one. I would have put this would be certainly, no question, in my top five. It might be number two after the Fortune episode that we covered a while back.
Which there is one sort of commonality between that episode and this one. Without getting too deep into it, this is certainly one of the better Cliff episodes, I think. And I was kind of thinking after it, I mean, obviously, I have talked at length about how I remember sitting down in the family room and watching Cheers as it aired with my family, and I was still fairly young, but I remember, and I had kind of vague memories of the die-in years, because I was very young at that time, and probably supposed to be going to bed or playing with my G.I. Joes or whatever it was, but was vaguely aware of those die-in years, and really caught those on reruns and syndication more as I grew to appreciate the chair. But I remember the Rebecca years, the Kirstie Alley years. Like, I remember it being an event, her first episode, and watching that with my whole family. And now we're kind of getting into this era, now we're in season 7, where, like, I remember watching these episodes kind of in real time. Like, I have concrete memories of seeing this one and laughing with my parents and my brother, and just, like, how weird this was at the time. So, but anyway, so...
For me, this came at a time where... what year was this?
This was 1988. This was the end of 1988, this episode.
88. So I had... I was actually back in school... after finishing college, going for my postgraduate stuff. So I was working practically full-time, going to school practically full-time, and Cheers at this point in my life was it was must-see TV, but it was also, you know, in my busy schedule, it was set to DVR, not the DVR, the VCR at the time, to record it and then watch it afterwards. And I have memories of watching this one and cracking up laughing and then keeping the recording of this particular episode because I thought it was so funny. So I've seen it many times over the years. I no longer have that VCR recording of it, but I do have it available to me at any time, just the same. And I watched it again for the purposes of recording with you, and I'll tell you, I'm still laughing, and it as far as I was concerned, it really holds up. It is, to me, one of the funniest episodes.
All right, well, folks, then let's get right into it. We are on Season 7, Episode 7, How to Win Friends and Electrocute People. Title obviously taken from How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. This one is written by Fief Sutton, directed by James Burrows, and the original air date was Thursday, December 15th, 1988. Cliff is a little nervous about his upcoming surgery, but the Cheers gang tells him not to worry about a routine appendectomy. In fact, they're so unconcerned about the surgery that no one from the bar goes to visit him at the hospital. Only Frasier stops by during the normal course of his rounds at the hospital, but Cliff overhears Frasier bad-mouthing him to a nurse. Having had plenty of time to reflect on the matter, Cliff determines that no one came to see him because none of them really care about him, because his attitude can be abrasive and off-putting. At Frasier's unintentional urging, Cliff decides to change his personality. He returns to Cheers wearing an electrode with a doctor who will inconspicuously deliver an electroshock to Cliff every time he says something obnoxious. Naturally, it takes less than 5 minutes for this experiment to get out of hand, with the whole Cheers bar watching Cliff react to phantom electric shocks, until Cliff tackles his doctor and wrestles the electrode remote away from him. Humiliated, Cliff decides to leave the bar forever. This time, though, the gang opts to show him they do care, and Norm brings Cliff back. As Cliff demonstrates his appreciation by ordering a round for the bar, he starts to shake again as the electrode remote is triggered by Old Al. Alrighty. The teaser for this episode, Woody is alone in the bar after closing. He's just sweeping up the floor, watching TV, kind of vaguely paying attention. And on the TV is a commercial for a party line, one of those hotlines before internet chat groups. This hotline, of course, targeted to lonely singles like Woody himself. And hearing it, Woody's kind of intrigued, and he hears the number, and this time the joke isn't he can't remember the phone number in time. He calls it right away. He calls the party line on the phone, and he goes, "Hi, my name is Woody. I'm from Indiana, and..." "Oh, hi, Mr. Clavin." Joke being that Cliff is also on a party line like this. So, what did you think about the teaser?
You know, I never thought that that was the way those worked. I can honestly say I've never called one of those things, but I do remember the days where if you put on, you know, late night television on, you know, on you know, whatever stations, I don't even know, USA or one of those stations, where they'd have these commercials. I always thought you called and there was just like a sexy voice talking to you. I didn't know it was like a chat room where you'd all discuss things. So that was the only thing that kind of threw me off. But otherwise, I thought this was, you know, this brought a smile to my face too.
I definitely think option.
I just didn't know this is how they work.
I definitely think the phone sex line was the option, but I had heard of these as of party lines. I will confess too that I never called one. I just don't like being that many people, you know, until I start podcasting in groups. But actually, that would be a good name for a round table, the party line. But no, okay. Yeah, it was kind of funny, just like the joke being that, you know, Cliff would also be one of our regular on these things, that they would recognize each other just by their voice, so.
You know, that it was just kind of unrelated to the show. It's, you know, sometimes there's been a couple that we've done, and I know others that I've heard you talk about, where it feels like they eliminated the cold open because of time, or, you know, it didn't work or whatever, and they kind of integrated the beginning of the episode as the cold open. I was just happy that this was an independent one of its own. You know, this wasn't something where they did something that failed. I don't know why, but I feel a certain ownership of this episode because I like it so much. So I hate to think that any aspect of it failed.
I was actually just thinking about this yesterday, even though I recorded it like a week and a half ago. There's a Woody bit in the middle of the episode that, forgive me for using an overused phrase right now, this whole little bit lives rent-free in my mind. But it's a scene where Woody gets a care package from home, from Hanover, and it's his Aunt Edna's killer fudge brownies. And they're like, "Oh, they're killers?" And he goes, "Yeah, they're called that because the first time my Uncle Ford smelled them baking, he came running in from the fields and got hit by a combine." And the joke kind of plays off from there, because he's like, "Yeah, he hung on for a few days, but at the end he was just praying to die." Well, eat up, everybody. He shares the brownies. And it's just this one little, like, 30-second beat that is in the middle of the episode but has no other connection. And I'm kind of like, that feels like it was written to be a teaser that they just inserted to kind of bulk up an episode because they needed something in the middle of Act 2 or something like that. Like, I don't know.
You got to wonder if they write these teasers, you know, it makes sense that they think of them and you write them down and you kind of leave them and you pull them out when you need them, because you don't need them as part of the whole plot. And you just pick an episode where it kind of goes or it fits for some reason, you know, where it's not going to kind of go against whatever you're doing.
Right.
But that all makes sense to me. So maybe that's, you know, maybe that's exactly what happened, is they had the episode written and, you know, they were, whatever, 30 seconds short, and they were like, you know, let's throw a joke in here, and they couldn't come up with something that fits, so they grabbed the teaser and threw it in.
Yeah.
That is, I do remember that line, though. That was another, you know, yet another good one.
Okay, back to this one. As we get into the episode proper, Rebecca is getting her picture taken for an article the Boston Globe is running about women who run pubs. What a weird article for the Globe to be running, but okay. She's a little bit nervous about the photo shoot, so Sam offers to give her some tips. He's like, all right, just kind of wet your lips. She does with her tongue. He's like, okay, good, now wet my lips. And she pushes him away. She shoots him up, and she sticks her tongue out at Sam, and the photographer happens to get that picture. And she's like, oh, you can't use that. And Sam's like, I want three of those. the photographer in this, actually, he's credited as the reporter, played by an actor named Steve Bean. This is his first credited role, and he had like 34 appearances on IMDb on some known shows, but like nothing big, nothing that really like kind of jumped out. But the guy, like in the episode and on his IMDb page, he looked familiar. But I can't say like that. Like, I mean, even like he appeared on Quantum Leap, or in one episode he appeared in like an episode of Night Court. I'm like, none of that like kind of like jumped out as like a memorable thing. But there's just something about his face. I'm like, I know I've seen him. So
yeah, I don't know him offhand. I don't know why. And you know, sometimes things just stay with you. I thought his best line, because it just came out so smoothly, was when he told Sam, "You're better than the Soupy puppet I normally use."
Yeah, and Rebecca has this good line. After he takes that picture, she's like, warn me the next time you're going to take my picture. I want to look natural and spontaneous. And then, of course,
yeah, she grabs the most phony pose ever.
She strikes that over-the-shoulder big smile pose and everything like that in business. So, and then Cliff comes in the bar and kind of like taps the door, and he has a striking this sort of somber attitude, saying goodbye to the door, goodbye to the stools, goodbye to the bar, and he tells Norm and the others that he's going in for surgery tomorrow and he might die. And he actually said, who knows if I'll ever walk under God's blue sky again. It's all up to the man upstairs. And Woody goes, who, Vic, the maitre d' from Melville's? And there's a good, after Woody says that, Sam pulls him aside. He's going to correct Woody, and then basically thinks better of it. He's like, no, this isn't worth it. It doesn't matter. So Sam asks,
you know, that kind of goes to like, whenever I hear about keys to acting, it's not always delivering your own lines. It's how you react to other people's lines. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a big thing with an ensemble cast like this, mm-hmm. is how they all react to each other. So that, you know, that those moments really do play well, and they add to the show, I think, a lot more than if you're watching it on the surface level than you realize.
And at this point, Sam has done that so often, kind of pulled Woody aside and had to explain the joke or explain what the bit was, and kind of like, at this point, he kind of pulls him aside, and you're like expecting him to do the same thing, and then he just kind of shakes his head. He's like, no, Cliff, what are you talking about? He kind of goes back to that. Cliff has had some abdominal pain, and he mentioned that it's an appendicitis, and at that point, the guys are like, oh, come on, yeah, like it's Norm, Cliff, and or Norm, like the rest of the other tertiary guys, Alan, Pete, and Hugh. And they think he's overreacting. Norm said he had his out when he was a kid. And Woody goes, I liked having my appendix removed. My parents said I could have all the ice cream I wanted. And Sam's like, you're thinking of your tonsils. And Woody goes, it was a long time ago, Sam, but I'm pretty sure it was ice cream. It's just, as we have said on the show, that's a joke that you can see coming a mile away, but it still works.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's typical Woody humor.
Have you had your appendix out or an appendectomy or anything like that?
I have not.
Okay.
I have not. I still have my appendix. I still have my wisdom teeth. All the useless things are still in my body. Mm. I only have things removed that actually you could use.
I had my appendicitis when I was 18. It was the summer, like just a couple of weeks before I was going to college. And it was a weird thing because, it was this sharp abdominal pain that got more and more acute as the night went on. I thought it was just like food sick or food poisoning or something like that. I thought it was just something that I ate. And the funny thing was, like, I was with my then my then ex-girlfriend, because we had broken up, gotten back together, broken up, gotten back, like, kind of like several times. And at that point, like, she'd come over, and I was just, like, in so much pain. I was like, look, just go away. I don't want to do anything tonight. And she was so mad that she thought I was blowing her off that she insisted we keep doing things. Let's go, like, ride a bike. Let's go play basketball. And I'm doing all these physical things with her that are just causing me pain. And I'm like, I am going crazy. You have to leave. And finally, like, I crawled into bed at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning. And, like, I tried to make myself throw up because I thought that was it and I can't do anything like that. Nothing is going on. My mom finds me the next morning, like, just coated in sweat and shivering. And she's like, do you have a fever or something? And I was like, I feel like I've been stabbed or something like that. Like, something's going on. So she took me to the hospital. They couldn't tell exactly what, like, or just like an indoor clinic or something. They couldn't find exactly, but my blood work was showing some anomalies, kind of crazy. So they actually sent me to the ER. They did a yes. ultrasound to, like, to see the appendix, to actually, like, check to see what was going on. And, you know, I'm trying to make jokes. I was like, is it a boy or a girl? The doctor doing, or the technician doing the ultrasound, cannot see my appendix in the ultrasound. They're like, it's not there. They're like, you've never had it removed, right? I'm like, right? They're like, well, this is a little bit weird. So they actually did an exploratory surgery to see if they could find my appendix. They did, and what they discovered was it had ruptured possibly twice in the middle of the night. And then, but, like, sort of like coagulated or resealed itself or something, so it didn't create a serious infection. And then,
sounds like a cliff type thing that happened to you.
Exactly.
You know, a normal man would just have his appendix removed.
Right.
I happen to regrow mine.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a genetic quirk in Daily Men. We all, like, our appendixes rupture and then reheal itself or regrow or something. But it had also, like, moved somehow, I think, while I was riding my bike with my girlfriend trying to just get her to go home, something like it had shifted position, so they couldn't find it. So they eventually dig it out, and I mean, thankfully, obviously, I was okay. I was home in a day, because, like, it hadn't been so infectious. But not for nothing, like, a month later, another boy from my same graduating class, I don't think he ended up graduating because he had other issues, but he did die from an infected appendicitis, like, a wow. month later. And so that kind of threw my head for a little bit of a whirl. But yeah, that was just, I always kind of remember that. Yeah, that was my experience with an appendectomy, is that it was an exploratory surgery because mine ruptured, rehealed, and then moved to a different part of my abdomen. I was like, this is
so. If Cliff
weird.
Is telling this story, he's going to say that when my appendix ruptured, it actually tried to remove itself. It started moving its way out of the body, and it would have been successful doing so, except the doctor interrupted its progress.
Yeah, it hijacked.
Only I would have to do that with a Boston accent, so
right.
I can't do that.
Cliff says that he doesn't want this kind of long emotional scene or eulogy. Just the gang sitting around telling funniest stories about him. Norm's like, okay, I got dibs on this one. Because, of course, they don't think this is a big deal. And as Cliffy is kind of hoping that they will all, you know, give their attention to him and his situation, they are very quick to throw their attention at Fraser and Lilith, who come in with a full itinerary of their road trip across the U.S. that they're planning. Lilith, of course, looking really good in, like, sunglasses and driving gloves and stuff like that. And she
That's
kinda,
as good as Lilith has ever looked.
Yes, yeah. I mean,
she looks in this episode.
Bebe Neuwirth in this era, in any era, but especially right now, she looks so good. Which is, I mean, you know, considering the taut, pulled back hair that she started off as, and will kind of return to. Yeah, she looks great.
I think that's exactly it. I think it's obvious she's a very, very pretty woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then once, you know, when she lets her hair down and actually looks like somebody of her appearance would look normally,
right,
then you see how pretty she is. When she's, you know, when she's got herself all, mm-hmm. you know, with her hair totally pulled back and, you know, in like a dressy suit and everything, she's, you know, looking as repressed as humanly possible. So then the the difference when she lets her hair down, you know, to use the expression, is really dramatic.
Right. I mean, I hate to boil it down to something so simple, but when they allow her to look more feminine is really kind of a trick. I mean, like when she's slicked back, when she's pulled back together, like wearing the like the tight suit and everything like that, there's a mechanical kind of quality to that. Well, I even joke in a later episode about her being a robot. So yeah, they do that. Yeah, Lilith makes a joke about that they're driving their Chevrolet instead of their Mercedes, and Fraser's like, "Oh, I forgot, I married a madcap." And yeah, here, you know, Cliff, you know, thinks that the gang should be focused on his surgery, but they're more interested in Fraser's trip. And Lilith pulls Sam aside. She tells him that she wants to do her share of the driving, but she's handicapped by the small fact that she has never operated a motorized vehicle. And he's like, "You never learned to drive?" And she goes, "I always meant to, but when I was younger, I was too busy having fun." Which, just coming from her, is just so good. So Sam agrees to teach her, and she's like, "How do you think I'll do?" And he's like, "Well, let me put it this way. I've never had a woman in the car who didn't do great." And she says, "Perfect. You teach me to drive, and I'll help you with your sense of humor." But throughout this, you know, Cliff is kind of eavesdropping on them, and he's clearly still nervous about the surgery, and he mentions the guy's visiting and his room number, even kind of just drops that into the conversation. Later on, Norm and one of the tertiary guys named Hugh are having a disagreement. Hugh was very upset, and he's going to leave, and Norm goes, "Fine, who wants her kind here anyway?" And this great, great Rebecca moment. She stops Hugh from leaving, and she pulls him and Norm aside. She's like, "Gentlemen, I think this bar is big enough for people who like the Addams Family and the Munsters."
I've been referring to that moment for years. I always thought that was hilarious. They had the banter going back and forth on many, many episodes, but silly arguments that they'd have. This might be the silliest one ever, which actually becomes a point of the bit as they go along. Right. But just, it had me cracking up too, because it's a stupid debate that I could see myself having with someone, just never getting as heated as they do here.
Right. Did you watch
discuss? I've watched both of the shows over the years, but you know, both in syndication. I was too young when they were actually aired. Yeah. But you know, you could see it's the same kind of debate people have with Ginger and Marianne, or you could have I Dream a Genie and Bewitched. You know, the same dopey arguments that geeks throughout the world will have, and it just seems so real that they would have the debate. But then to take it to the point where they're like ready to go to blows over it is where it becomes just so funny. Yeah. And some of the lines say, just, you know, how Grandpa never won an Emmy is beyond me, because he stole this whole bit from Uncle Fester. So much stuff like that, especially if you are familiar with those shows and, you know, the similarities between them, and they all, you know, they did come on around the same time.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just, to me, that's priceless. It was just a great bit.
Yeah.
And it's a throwaway. It's not part of the episode.
Well, it seems that, except they do come back to it like once or twice, which is sort of funny. And I mean, just for my part, I watched episodes of The Munsters on syndication. I had heard of The Addams Family, but I never saw any version of it until the movie in the 90s with Raul Julia and Angelica Houston. But later on, I would eventually see like a few repeats of everything of the original Addams Family, because I always liked the actor who played Gomez, because I remembered him from playing the character named Buddy Ryan in Night Court.
Mm-hmm.
Harry's dad. So once upon a time, he played the Riddler, too. I forgot about that one. Yeah, so as they kind of get back to the bar and kind of go back to their normal business, they see the article about Rebecca in the newspaper in the Boston Globe that they were talking about, and she's like, "Oh, how does the picture look?" And they're like, "Well, the picture looks great, except it's on the wrong page." And Rebecca actually taking a look at it, she's like, "Wow, I look beautiful and sexy." And Carla points out, "And dead as a doornail," because her picture is in the obituary section. And Woody kind of looking closely at Inspector, he's like, "I didn't know you helped build the Panama Canal." She's like, "Woody, I'm not dead." He's like, "Obviously I know that. So where did they put the dirt anyway?" He's still asking about that. And then a big bouquet of flowers is delivered to the bar, And Rebecca reads the card that is from corporate. Dear friends at Cheers, we mourn the loss of our friend Rebecca Howe. When she's like, oh God, the corporate thinks she's dead. The last line of the card was like almost, it was like a runner-up for my home run of the thing. It's just the addition, we mourn the loss of our friend Rebecca Howe. At last her pain is over. The fact that somebody at corporate thought to include that on the card.
Yeah, it's just that bit. Again, you know, and this is why this is one of my favorite episodes. It's just so jam-packed with stuff that makes me laugh. But to that bit, you know, it's funny because it comes back to the beginning when she's doing the posing. Now they you know, gave you the punchline with where she ends up in the obituaries. But then the flowers arriving is kind of like the, you know, the sugar on top. It's just, you know, it just keeps piling on the same joke. And what is this joke from the, you know, with the photography scene and everything, it's 2.5 minutes of the episode, but it has me cracking up.
Yeah.
It's just this, that's what it is about this episode. It's just so much jammed in there.
Mm-hmm. The delivery boy, played by Andrew Lowry, again, same, kind of only has a handful of appearances, but he was, or IMDb credits, I mean, but he was in the movie Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and the NC-17 rated Bruce Willis sexual thriller Color of Night. So rated because you can see little Bruce Willis in that movie for half a frame. So, anyway, after that, Norm and the guys still arguing about the Addams Family and the Munsters. Frasier comes in. He's disgusted. He's like, this is one of the stupidest conversations he has heard since he started coming to there. And they're like, hey, we're offended by it. Why isn't it the absolute stupidest or something? And he kind of throws out that, well, this conversation, it lacks meaningless statistics and inane historical trivia. And then it occurs to him, he's like, say, where is Cliff anyway?
So now you're tying the throwaway joke into the main plot. Mm. Again, to me, that's brilliant.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Find out that nobody went to visit Cliff in the hospital. Norm says he tried. He got as far as the lobby, but you know how the smell of alcohol makes him queasy, he says, as he is gesturing for a refill. Sam says he didn't go because he didn't have the night off. He asks Woody why Woody didn't go, and Woody holds up his finger and there's a string tied tightly around the tip of his finger. He's like, oh, that's what the string is to remind me for. But then he holds up the other finger. He's like, what is this for, to remind me of? So, like, Frasier's like, did anybody call or send flowers? He's like, Carla? And she's like, yeah, right. So, and what she says, it's just an appendectomy. They're taking out a useless organ. He's chock full of those. So Frasier decides that because they say he's at Boston Presbyterian, which is not the name of an actual hospital, but Frasier will go during his normal rounds. And when he gets there, the bed is empty, and the nurse says that Mr. Clavin was discharged, and Frasier gets mad. He says he drove all over town to find a stupid card for the idiot Clavin. But Cliff walks into the back into the hospital room in his normal civilian outfit, one of the few times we see him outside of the mail carrier outfit. And this is where the scene ends for the commercial, and then when we come back, Frasier kind of apologizing that Cliff saw that, but Cliff said that he did some soul searching. He's like, a man's got a lot of time to think when he has tube up his nose. So, Cliff thinks that they didn't come to see him because they don't like him. They saw Sam in the hospital. They visited Carlo and she had the twins. He mentions even Norm after his butt tuck. So, and he tells Frasier to cut the malarkey, and because Frasier's, you know, trying to reassure him, and Frasier's like, well, okay, if I have to be honest, you know, maybe you're not the most popular person at the bar. And Cliff jumps on him. He's like, oh, and you are, huh? And that's when Cliff is like, you think maybe comments like that are why they don't like me? And they kind of have this brief little thing about, you know, attitude adjustment. It's like, it's not just like quitting smoking or something. But that gives Cliffy the idea, and Frasier tries to stop him, but it's too late. So
when he starts to realize it, and he says, could I possibly be that insensitive? And he actually sits down on the bed with the guy who's apparently in critical condition. And causes him pain. Yeah. And he says, you know, could I be that insensitive? And he's like, yes, you are.
He sits down on the guy in the bed next to him. That guy credited as Mr. McManus, played by Ed Wright, who's in a lot of stuff, but it was in an episode of Twin Peaks. that guy. So we go back to the bar, and Frasier is encouraging everyone to be polite to Cliff, and Lilith comes in again in her sunglasses and driving gloves. She's like, "I like driving. It's a wonderful feeling." She's like, total control of woman over machine, the speed, the power, the ecstasy. And she gives Frasier this kind of like wink. She's like, "I was jazzed." And appropriately, Sam comes in with a bloody nose. And he calls Lilith insane and a menace. He's like, and they're freaking out. They're like, "What's going on?" And Sam's like, "I can't believe you made that gesture to that guy." He's like, and Lilith is like, and of course, this whole scene as Frasier, or as Sam and Lilith are shouting at each other, and Sam is calling her crazy. So Frasier is just staring at them, like, "What the heck is going on? What happened? What did I miss?" And Lilith is like, "I've seen people make that gesture to Frasier all the time." And he rolls his eyes. Sam is like, "But Frasier doesn't drive an 18-wheeler with a bumper sticker that says insured by Smith and Wesson." It's like, that's a good moment. And we find out that this truck driver cut her off, so she gunned the car up to 80 and tried to run the truck off the road. So she picked a fight with the driver and thought Sam could fight him. And she's like, "Yeah, that little headbutt you delivered to his fist sent him reeling."
Haven't you seen that in your life? Because I have. Where a girlfriend will mouth off to a big guy, and you're standing there, and it's like,
now this is my responsibility.
I'm going to have to deal with this. She's not going to.
Yeah.
This guy's not going to hit her, but he might belt me in the mouth.
Right. You have to defend her honor, but she's the one who put her honor in jeopardy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have seen that happen. It's rarely happened to me, thank God, but I've seen it happen on numerous occasions where fights were started over something as stupid as that. And So it's there's a certain amount of realism to this very, very silly episode.
And then we cut to a scene in the stairwell outside the bar. One of the few times, I don't think this is the first time, but it's one of the first times that we've seen, we've had a shot like this where we actually have a scene in the stairwell, like the shot from up above the stairs, kind of looking down. As Cliff comes down with this.
It's the first time I ever remember seeing, like, an alleyway there.
There. You know,
behind them, there's some garbage pails and, like, an alleyway. I never saw that before, which makes you think it's almost like street level, which you know it goes down. So it's a little strange, but it definitely caught my eye, and I was, like, you know,
the set
kind of trying to figure out the layout.
Right. The guy who he comes in with, who is just credited as Dave, even though I don't think that's ever said. He's not credited as Dr. Dave or anything like that. Played by Robert Benedetti, who, again, has like a lot of credit. It's nothing big, but I did note that he played a character named Dr. Mortimer in one episode of the Flash TV show from the 90s. He was also in the movies Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and My Stepmother is an Alien.
Yeah, I looked up his credits also because I thought, you know, he has a familiar look about him.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see anything in his credits where I said, okay, I remember him playing that part.
Right. Yeah, same. That's kind of the case for all the guest actors in this episode. So we between their conversation, we learn that Cliff has an electrode planted on him so that every time he says something obnoxious or offensive or braggadocious or whatever, something that might be a turnoff for the people around him, this other guy, Dave, will give him an electroshock with a little handheld, like, pen-sized remote. And he goes inside and everything like that, and Dave kind of takes a position in the hallway so he can watch him, but you know, Cliff insists that he doesn't want to bore the gang with stories about his operation. You know, he wants to know what they have been up to. And so they oblige. Like, Sam is giving Lilith driving lessons. And Cliff is like, shouldn't he be giving her personality lessons? And then you just see him do this little twitch thing, which we see will be like the way he reacts to the shock. And it's great because you don't see anything. You don't get, like, really an audio cue. It's all just John Ratzenberger just doing this physical bit. And it's so good. And he tries to play it off like nothing happened. Like, he absolutely didn't just get shocked. And they're just looking around like, what was that? And he keeps saying, like, he should be, like, a normal person would be out of commission for 3 weeks, but with his stamina, he gets a shock again. He's like, yeah, 3 weeks. He's like, can't brag about it. So they actually ask him, they're like, why don't you tell us more about, they want to get Cliff involved and make him feel like he's involved in part of the gang. So they actually ask him who came up with the Postal Service motto. He's like, can you excuse me for a second? He goes back to talk to him. He's like, they did ask. He's like, okay. He's like, keep it, you know, casual. He tells them that it dates back to 500 BC in ancient Egypt. The pyramids were post offices, and the Sphinx was a late night drop off. This is such a Cliff thing.
Yeah, most of your something postal related.
ancient like wonders of the world were postal related. And he gets the shock. So he kind of saunters back. He tells Dave, he's like, "You're getting a little trigger happy with that thing, aren't you?" At that point, Rebecca walks by, and the guy just shocks Cliff again. He's like, "I'm sorry, thumb spasm." So, Cliff asks, "Who's gonna buy him a beer?" Shock. He's like, he looks back at Dave. He's like, "It was a joke, you bozo." Shock for insulting him. He goes, "Stop that, Shock." He's like, I said, "Stop." And then at this point, he's like, "All right, this experiment is over." And Dave shocks him 3 times, and he shouts, "You're a quack!" And at that point, Dave just holds down the button, and Cliff is doing this little kind of dance shimmy thing as he's trying to make it to this guy. And he finally gets him. He tackles him to the ground, and he wrestles the controller away from him. All of this while the gang is just watching and staring dumbfounded at them, making no effort to get up off their seats or help in any way, just like letting this whole thing play out. And Cliff gets the remote and points it at the guy, like, now it's his weapon to use. He's like, "Let's see how you like it," and pushes and thumbs the button. Of course, the electrode is still on Cliff, so he just shocks himself. And Dave,
I don't go as far as tears in my eyes now when I watch it. I still laugh every time I see it. But the first time I saw this, I had tears in my eyes. I was laughing so hard. And I think the biggest key to it is John Ratzenberger sells it. That little thing he does,
yes,
really just like it feels like, okay, you know, he is getting shocked. It really feels that way. And it's just especially when the guy holds the button down and he starts like just pivoting, you know, in electric agony. It's hilarious as far as I'm concerned. This was just, you know, it doesn't get funnier than this for me. It really doesn't. I enjoy intellectual humor, but just silly humor does it for me too, apparently.
And the fact that they're able to sustain the joke for as long as they do, because it's not like set up punchline or even just some sort of like very simple physical like gag or visual gag or something like that. Like, they play this out for a couple of minutes, like from the first little shock until he starts getting irritated, until he starts getting hostile, until they're actually fighting, until he's shocking himself. Like, that evolution. And the guy's just like, "We still have your deposit on file," and he runs out or something. And then, of course, Cliff and they're just like, Sam is just like, "Cliff, what the hell is going on?" And he's like, "About what? What are you talking about?" And Cliff has to come clean that he knew when they didn't come to visit him, it was because they didn't like him very much and hoped he could change his personality by bribing a guy from aversion therapy to shock him every time he acted like a jerk. And he says he'll see them later, and he's like, "On second thought, no, he won't see them." And he's like acting like he's gone forever, and he heads out the door, and it closes behind his back. And Norm is like, "Yeah, he'll be back. Don't worry about it." And Alan's like, "I don't know. He sounded different this time." And Woody's like, "One of us should go get him." And Carl's like, "Yeah, but who?" And everybody kind of looks at Norm. And this point, like, who should go after him? The door cracks open, and Cliff, in his most pitiful voice, just, "I want Nom." like he couldn't actually leave. He's just waiting for them and waiting for somebody.
Like the 5-year-old.
Yes, of course, of course. So Norm gets up off the chair. He's like, I'll see if I can catch him. And he brings him back from the stairwell, and he says that they all like him, and they all owe him an apology for not visiting him in the hospital. And Cliff can't leave it at that. He can't leave with his dignity intact. He's like, and? Like, what else? And they're like, we're sorry for making you feel like you needed shock therapy. He's like, and? He's like, Sam is like, it wasn't necessary because we're the jerks. And Cliff walks right up to Carla. He's like, and? And she's like, do not push it. Like, he's like, Cliff, she'll kill you before she apologizes to you. So Cliff decides that, you know, he will change his personality by buying a round of champagne for his friends at the bar. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he quickly pulls Sam aside. He's like, the cheap stuff, okay, Sammy? It's like, so good. So, and then as they're all kind of celebrating, Cliff starts to, like, twitch again. He does that, like, thing again. He's like, okay, who has the button? And he starts shouting again. And cut to the Sinatra fan himself, Old Al, sitting at the back of the bar in his spot, holding the remote with the line, dance, mailman! And he thumps it, and Cliff starts shocking again. And, gosh, like, again, going back to the first time we saw this, I remember that, and, like, I, probably chronologically, I bet I saw this episode before I saw Fortune and Men's Weight. So, this wasn't the first time I had heard Al speak, but this was like the first, like, oh, he got the best, like, the like moment, like, this is the last line of the episode that just, like, that nailed it. And just that line, just dance, mailman, and starts torturing Cliff.
It's a great capper to what I think is a great episode.
Yeah, it's so funny.
It's just, there's so many levels on this one. Like I said, it's just, what they did was, you know, first of all, they had the prime plot with Cliff and everything, and I thought that was terrific. But then, you add to it two really cool, really funny subplots, or actually three if you count the debate at the bar. But, you know, you have the whole thing with Lilith learning to drive and with Rebecca, you know, posing for the picture and ending up in the obituaries. So it's jam full of stuff, and there really isn't, in my mind, a down moment in this episode. Everything about it just kind of flows by so quick, and it just keeps making me laugh and laugh and laugh. And I think if I, you know, I probably, when I first watched this, because I had set the timer on my VCR, I probably had to keep rewinding.
Yeah,
because I was probably laughing so hard that I would be missing things that they were saying. You know, and if you were watching this live and you didn't record it, you know, you probably missed out on a lot, because it was just so funny. I mean, this, yeah, like I said, to me, this is definitely one of my top episodes ever. And I was a little disappointed when I checked the list and it wasn't in the top 15. You know, it's like everybody should love this episode, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is. It's, yeah, it is one of those forgotten but really, really funny episodes, which I think can be said for a lot of season 7 episodes. They're very standalone. There isn't a whole lot of world building. There isn't like a status quo shift, like a cast member change or anything in this season. So I think it kind of gets forgotten. There's not like a really long like subplot with a new character. Like next season, we'll get the introduction of Robert Colcord and the way he affects Rebecca and everything. So I think this season in general is often kind of just forgotten. It's also a shorter season, but every episode is a little gem in and of itself.
Like I said, I had started to look up to see, you know, what they thought of this episode, and I saw there was like a Cheers chat thing where they discuss episodes, and so I looked to see what they said about this one, and kind of said, you know, that this one was really funny. But they presented it, and it was surprising to me. They said something to the effect that it was a really funny episode after a real lull in the series. So it I thought the season was fine, but I guess maybe they wanted something to shake up the status quo already. You know, and they just had this, the thing, you know, Rebecca added in, so I didn't think you really needed it. But they mentioned, you know, it seemed like they did not think the character of, what's his name, Tom Skerritt, they didn't think Evan Drake. I kept thinking Drake was the first name. I couldn't get it out of my head. you know, it seemed like they didn't think his character really worked with her. And I thought he was great in it. I thought he was very deadpan and you know, I thought there was some serious humor there. But it seems like the opinion in this particular chat room was that this you know, the season or the series had dropped a level, and that this episode kind of brought it back up to that level. Yeah, I disagree. I think the series is going along fine. This happens to be a gem in the season, but I don't think that the series was really lagging.
No, but like some of the episodes just before this were really, really strong. I mentioned that the fourth episode of this season is one of my all time favorites, and I can say like it's an episode that nobody remembers, just sort of like this one, like everybody. But for me, and it's not like a really serious episode, but for me, it's one of my all time favorite Sam specific episodes. Just with him going down to the bar in Cancun and everything that plays out after that, I think that is a hilarious episode. So it always sticks as one of my favorite episodes. But it's kind of like, yeah, the same as like all of these. It's like when you watch it, it's like, yeah, like there may have been episodes with a little bit more meat or a little bit more significance or a little bit more drama and tension that caused them to be more memorable. But just for pound laughter, I don't know that you're going to beat episodes like this. Because it's just like, again, like the first act, like there's so many little bits and little scenes that it does go very quickly. But like by the time we get into the second act of this one, between the scene between Frasier and Cliff in the hospital room, and then once Cliff comes back to the bar, just like the last 5 or 6 minutes of the episode, it's just nonstop shaking your head and holding your sides laughing. It's great. So, yeah.
And then on top of that, to me, there's even a lot of little comments and things that people make that stayed with me. You know, Frasier, the two things when he says, you know, get a card for the idiot Clavin, that makes me laugh. Or when he's talking about his trip and he's saying, you got to stay straight here, or otherwise it's hello, Tulsa. I find that amusing. And it goes to what I've been talking about today. I've been finding myself talking about this a lot. Sometimes it's not the script. Sometimes it's the actor. The particular line of "Hello Tulsa" is not all that funny, but the way it's delivered, I find it very amusing.
Right. Yeah.
So you know, sometimes it's up to the actor to do it right, and you know, in this instance, I think Kelsey Grammer really did it justice. A lot of Lilith's lines, you know, I think they are funny in this episode. You know, when she just looks, I was fine. but it's her delivery that does, you know, that makes it. If it was delivered by a lesser actress, I don't think it would be as funny as it is.
And I mean, that's why, I mean, Lilith is my runner up for the employee of the week. It's a distant runner up, just because, and I'm giving this away, but because it's a Cliff centric episode, and this is like one of John Ratzenberger's best performances because of that whole physicality with the electroshock. So he was so obviously the best part of this episode for me. But yeah, I thought Lilith was hilarious in each of her little scenes and her dialogue. So yeah, I gave her the runner up. Just before we get into those superlatives, for Norm's tab, he had 4 beers this episode, which brings him up to 618 for the series. Who was your employee of the week or your MVP?
It had to be John Ratzenberger. Yeah. I mean, he was just so funny. There's the whole thing. I mean, he's a lot of his line delivery leading up to it is just, you know, would make him certainly a likely employee of the week. But then the way he does the physical comedy at the end, it seals it. You know, this is one of the, to me, this is one of the top performances of the show. Mm. You know, not even just necessarily this episode. This would be a standout if you were trying to find, you know, your employee of the season. He would be a contender for the way he performs in this one.
just that physical bit that
like I said, he sells it, and that's the key.
Right.
Because if you don't believe he's getting shocked, then it's not that interesting.
Right. And the way he's able to like just like switch as soon as the shock is over, the way he gets back into the dialogue and like changes course for what he was saying. Like, well, they say like a normal person after an appendectomy would take 3 weeks to recover, but a guy with my stamina, 3 weeks. It's like, just like that that switch, that transition. I'm like, oh man, that was good. So. And for the home run, like, this was tough, like, because that entire sequence truly deserves the award. Like, It's amazing, that whole bit from like the first shock until he shocks himself. Like that whole build up and payoff and everything was amazing. But for like the line that I always forget about and then it catches me and I start laughing again is just when that door cracks open and he's just, I want Nam. It's just like that. So sad and pitiful.
That was definitely a contender for me. Yeah. What I ended up going with, and I could have gone so many on this. There were a lot of contenders in this particular episode, but what I ended up going with was this whole diatribe about the ancient wonders and how they were all postal related, and the Sphinx was a late night drop off. It was just like,
that was so funny, so dumb.
It is so dumb that it cracked.
And then, and of course, can't go without saying the dance mailman. that little bit at the end.
It's not quite at the Sinatra level, but it's still
it's pretty
very
funny,
laugh-worthy. Yeah. And again, it just adds a a capper to an otherwise stellar episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was fun. It's not going to make my top five, but I understand why it's in your top five. Like, it's just genuinely just really, really funny. And I know there are some good Cliff episodes in the later seasons. I don't know if any of them are better than this, in my opinion. But that will remain to be seen. We'll see how the Jeopardy one holds up after this time. But
The Jeopardy one is another all-time when you get to that. And that was on the list of the top 15, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And
that doesn't surprise
me. I wonder if they kind of had that on, and I can understand certainly, different minds, which people might say, hey, that one's better than this one. And then they might have said, well, I'm going to put two Cliff-centric episodes on like that. So that might be the reason.
If you remember, I'm assuming the Thanksgiving episode was very high, if not the highest on that list.
I'm trying to remember now what was number one, but it may have been the Thanksgiving was certainly in the top three.
Yeah. And that's an episode that I mentioned personally. I understand why that's such a beloved episode, but for me personally, it's nowhere near the top of the list. I love it, but it's not like I've got plenty that I like a lot more than that one. It's subjective.
You know what? I was going to say, when you have a show that's this good, it's easy to debate which ones are the best.
Yeah, the wealth of great episodes and great content here, of course, yeah. So, Paul, as always, thank you very much for coming back on the show. Your regular invitation, you will be back again, probably in season 8, because I love talking about
this. I'll look forward to that.
Tons of fun. Until next time. Where can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
You can find me on Back to the Bins, where I co-host with Scott Gardner, Bill Robinson, and Dave Pascarella, and we review old comics. And we've been kind of reinvigorated of late because, we just passed episode 600, we've started to just do some focuses on different series and different things that went on and different things in the history of comics. So we're really enjoying ourselves on that. And I'm also a co-host now. I was the solo guy, but I have co-host with Mr. Sean Whalen on Is It Yours, where we have guest stars regularly on, or guest co-hosts, and we review movies, old, new, and good and bad, but we have a lot of fun with that, and we place them up against the Jaws scale, which is a scale that I created, in a moment of silliness. We have fun with that too. So,
and Paul, thank you for being on the show, and thanks to all of you out here who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Podcast Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of the Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Hey, it's good to be back, so who's going to buy me a beer? Come on, it was a joke, you bozo. Stop that. I said stop that. All right, the experiment's off. You're a quack.
Ha, 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 ha